You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, I'm Brett.
And I'm Steven.
And we are
the Broadway Husbands.
We're just your all-American married couple making their living in the arts and pursuing a growing family. On the Broadway Husbands podcast, we offer advice from our ordinary lives under extraordinary circumstances.
We are living proof that you can love who you love and love what you do. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss our weekly episodes. And if you really love us, make sure you leave a review on whatever podcast platform you listen to us on. Take a screenshot and tag us on Instagram at Broadway Husbands.
And don't forget to check out the Broadway Podcast Network. We are proud to be members of BPN. For more details, go to bpn.fm/husbands. Well, we have a very special guest today.
Yes, we do.
David Burka.
Broadway star, superstar chef, and family man, David Burka.
Hi, guys. What an intro. I especially love the sing-songy intros. That makes me feel like I'm back on the boards.
Well, you know, it's the Broadway Podcast Network. We gotta serve it. How are you? Where are you?
I'm currently in East Hampton. We bought a farm here a couple of years ago. And we finally just moved into it April. So it was perfect timing.
Good timing.
We all got COVID end of March and we were in quarantining in April. So
wow. That is perfect timing.
Yeah, it is really perfect timing. So we spent a lot of time, you know, moving in and out and decorating and nesting and harvesting, and it's been fun. And we're super grateful that we're able to stretch out a little bit in Long Island.
Yeah, that's so great. I think most people know that you started your career on Broadway. Can we go back a little bit and just talk about what your ambition was to pursue that? Because I do want to talk about chefing and where you are now with your food, but was your goal, like, growing up in Michigan, and we also have to talk about our mutual friend Kate Reinders, who's also from Michigan.
Yay!
Was your goal and your dream, like, at that time growing up in Michigan, just to be on Broadway? Was that always
totally
how you saw your life?
And you'll be surprised that there was a group of us. There was something in the water. I was in a children's theater group, a professional children's theater group called the Peanut Butter Players, and we worked downtown Detroit every single weekend. And some of the alumni of the Peanut Butter Players are Danny Gerwin, Aaron Dilley, Heather Dilley, Randy Becker, Celia Kinnan-Bolger, Sutton Foster, Hunter Foster. Am I missing anyone? PJ Powers, who works a lot in Chicago. Mark Tyke, who works a lot in Chicago. So there was a bunch of us that literally just were working as a young kids, and then a lot of us ended up going to the University of Michigan for musical theater. So that was our thing. And as we went to Michigan, I mean, there was no other choice but to move to New York. I mean, we were being trained every single day to get a Broadway show. And within, you know, after graduating 3 weeks after, you know, getting there with first month's rent paid and lying to be a bartender, which I got promptly fired, I got my first big gig. So it was, you know, that was totally my dream from the moment I was 10 years old till now, you know?
Wow. And so your Broadway debut was The Goat, or Who is Sylvia? Is that correct?
Yeah, I had a bunch of things that were, my Broadway debut was The Goat, but I did, that was supposed to be scheduled to Broadway, was Children of Eden with Stephanie Mills and Darius DeHaas.
At Paper Mill,
yeah. Yeah, that was my first. That was my first. I understudied Hunter Foster as a part of Kane.
I was obsessed with that show. I listened to that cast recording so much.
I'm on it. I was the dancing unicorn that got left off the arc. That was my big, the big role that I had. But it was amazing. I mean, the cast of 60. And all shapes, all sizes, all colors, kids from our youngest kid was six years old, and our oldest adult was 65. So it was amazing. It was such a cool...
And it's like one of those shows you like, why, you know, nothing ever you kind of hoped that it would, you know, go somewhere and have a bigger, I mean, besides regional productions. I did it in Summerstock, but, you know, I love that score so much.
It's a great score. And we were all expecting it to move, you know, didn't happen. I guess we couldn't find a theater big enough because it was a big production, a huge set and huge, a lot of people. I think it might have been too much money. But listening to Stephanie, we were on stage all the time, and listening to Stephanie Mills sing that song every single night was incredible.
Yeah.
So from there, I went and did the national tour of Beauty and the Beast, first national. So I did that with Aaron Dilley again, Sarah Litzinger, and Sarah. Fred. Oh God, what was his name? Who played the Beast? But yeah, it was a lot of fun. And then from there, I said, I can't dance in the chorus anymore, so I'm going to go back to school and study theater. And then from there, I got the play about the baby that was in Houston. And then from there, Edward cast me in The Goat.
Where'd you go to school for drama?
I went to William Esper and studied with Bill Esper.
Nice.
So I did the 2-year program. And and then from there, it was, you know, I was doing a lot of commercials at the time. So I was making my living doing like national commercials. And I did all the Gap commercials, the dancing Gap commercials. And
the West Side Story ones. They did like Barrett.
The hip hop, the country, all the Old Navy, the crazy tech vest with RuPaul and all those crazy dance videos.
I remember those. Yeah.
So cool.
Nuts. And then I was the face of the army for 5 years, which was weird. I just shaved my head in the commercial. So I was doing a lot of that. And then, you know, Jerry Beaver, a big casting director, was saying, would you ever think about auditioning for a play, a new Edward Albee play? And I said, yeah, sure. And so I did it and I booked it. It was wild. Just crazy.
Awesome. So yeah. Was Sally Field in the play when you were in it?
Yes.
And did you go on with her? Like how did that happen? Tell us about that a little bit.
Oh my God. So I was covering it, and then I forgot, not Jeffrey Carlson, because I forgot who the guy covered. Oh my God, so long ago. But he ended up having to have a go into the tooth thing. So
a root canal.
And so I ended up going on with, it was Bill Irwin and Sally Field, and it was incredible. It was just a dream come true.
And so that was officially your Broadway debut with Sally.
That was
Field,
officially
right?
My Broadway debut.
That's so cool. That's
and I mean, awesome. We still see, I mean, I ended up, when I lived in LA, I would do this thing at, in Ojai Playwrights Festival, and she would always be there. So we got to work together, you know, a couple of times after that. And she is just, I mean, I cannot say enough about her. She's the nicest, sweetest, kindest, most amazing, giving actress you could ever think about, ever work with.
She seems it. Okay, so in all of that, when you're like shaving your head and you're doing a West Side Story Gap ad, are you like thinking, I'm going to be a dad one day? Like, had you had a vision of being a family man? Or was
so
was your...
it's crazy. at 24, I met a guy who I fell in love with. He was a writer, producer, like, you know, amazing producer for Columbia Pictures. And met me and his surrogate the same day. And he ended up having kids, twins. And I jumped on the bed. I thought this was it. This is my rest of my life. I'm in love. I'm going to get married to this guy. And I raised twins, another set of twins who are actually 10 years and 7 days apart from my twins. They're 20 now. So I was 24 raising kids, a kid raising kids. So we ended up, it didn't end up working out. Unfortunately, but I still keep in contact with them all the time, and they're really super close, and they're more like niece and nephew to me. So yeah, I knew at a young age that kids were in my future. And then I had to like distance from it. Like I can't, cause I had a boyfriend after him and he wanted to have kids with me. And I was like, no, I'm like the most fertile person you ever met. At like 25. So I was like, I can't do it again. So then I ended up being Neil, and then you know, he was more my pace. And then when my mom died, we realized life's too short and we have to go do this. We have to, you know, there's no right time to have a kid. And so we just, you know, started the process.
Nice. Wow. Wow. So when and there did you decide to go get your culinary degree and pursue?
So it was living in LA. I was living in LA, and you know, when I moved with Neil, you know, I did Gypsy with Bernadette Peters, and Neil and I met. He was doing Assassins.
Kate.
We were both doing with Kate, yes. Sam
and
Mendes.
That's when you all met. That's when you and Neil met.
That's when, yeah, well, Kate knew Neil. I don't know if you know the story, but Kate knew Neil really well because they hung out a lot when she was doing Into the Woods at the Amundsen in Los Angeles. So they knew each other, and I was buddy-buddy with Kate. We were, you know, joined at the hip, and we were doing everything together. And Neil was doing Cabaret at Studio 54, and then we were walking on 9th Avenue between 44th and 45th, and we ran into each other. And, you know, I knew who he was, but I never was a Doogie Howser fan. And I knew that he was big in theater, and I knew he was, you know, it was whatever. I never really thought much of him, you know, just that he was a theater guy and whatever. And so Kate started striking up a conversation with him, and I sort of ignored him. I sort of went back and started texting on my phone, not really giving him the time of day.
That's how you hooked him. You were like, I'm not interested.
That's it. Like, I totally manipulated him. That's it. I didn't give him the time of day, and he said, hey, Kate, well done. This guy's super hot. And she said, oh no, David's gay. Totally gay. And then he was like, what? He was like, and then I was in a relationship at the time. So he's like a vulture circling, and Kate would call him up at intermission, go, okay, we're going to Angus McIndoe's tonight. Come meet us. So we'd literally, everywhere after the show, I would go, and I'm like, Neil Patrick Harris is stalking me, completely stalking me.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
And so we ended up hanging out, and, you know, a friendship became whatever, and my relationship was not going so well. I was dating a publicist in LA, and he was so busy and at work in LA that it was hard for him to get back and forth. So long distance relationships can't really say much about them. So then I broke up, and then Neil and I started dating, and that was it. You know, one date turned into a weekend, and a weekend turned into going on 17 years.
Boom. Wow. Congratulations. Boom. That's amazing.
It's wild. So we moved to LA, and I just assumed that I would get a pilot. Like, I just did a Broadway show. I'm going to get a pilot. No problem. Because I was so fast out of the gate in New York that literally show to show to show, and it was nonstop for me, and I never had an issue, never had to suffer in that world. So you know, it was slow for me. It was really few and far between. I got a few TV gigs here and there, and then I did this Steven Spielberg show called On the Lot that I thought was a big success and ended up becoming a huge flop. And I just was depressed because I was going in for stuff that I didn't necessarily love. I was going in for these like young, strapping lead guys in Los Angeles, and I'm up against all these models, and I'm not that. I'm like this quirky, weird, you know, musical theater, you know, goofy guy, and I'm not that young romantic lead guy. I mean, I have played that, but in the soul of my souls, that's not who I am. So I'd go in for these crappy, you know, shows that the writing was ridiculous and I was depressed because I didn't want to even go in on them, and then I wouldn't get them. So then my mom ended up getting cancer and dying within 20 days. So I was like, what am I going to do? This is not cute. I can't be living in LA, being rejected, being in a place that I don't love, that I feel like it's stripping me of everything that I am, that I feel like I can't be authentic. I can't be who I am. What else do I love to do that gets me excited? And so I thought, you know, in my world of my life, whenever I'm stressed, I would make a homemade stock or try a new recipe or make a cake or whatever. So I really loved cooking. So I thought, you know what, if anything happens, I could just have a skill for my family in the future and be able to cook for my friends. And so I ended up going to culinary school. And then from there, things just started falling from the sky for me, like working with Mario Batali and then Thomas Keller and then Kat Cora asking me to be, you know, her sous chef for Iron Chef America. And I mean, all these crazy things that I didn't even expect. And I ended up opening up a catering company in Los Angeles, and it was, you know, catering to the stars. And I did all that crazy stuff. And then, you know, going back and forth, I did a few things here and there. And in my heart of hearts, like in the past month or two, I realized, like, this is not what I want to be doing. It was a real distraction. And I realized that cooking has been fun and it's been an awesome vocation and a really great distraction for me, but it's not what I want to do in my heart of hearts. Like, I'm an actor, you know, I want to be creating. I want to be creating roles and being an emotion and being emotional and affecting people and making people think and making people entertained. So I've done a lot of soul searching lately, but so I digress. That's how I sort of became to be a chef in the chef world. So it's been fun and I always will have it, but I think I've sort of really known now that I know what I want to do. So I was in LA. I'm just going to keep on talking.
You don't need do it. Keep going.
I was in LA and it was always, you know, after How I Met Your Mother, it was always the goal to come back to New York. I never wanted to live life in New York. I'm not a New Yorker. I'm not an LA guy. I just don't, it just doesn't work out with my makeup. You know, I don't love it there. So the kids were three, we moved to LA, moved to New York. Neil was scheduled to do Hedwig. Mm-hmm. And then I said, okay, well, within a year, if I don't get another Broadway show, I'll either have another kid or just think, you know, keep doing the cooking thing. So I'm in the audience of, A Lion King with my kids, their first Broadway show. And who do I sit behind? Daryl Roth. So Daryl produced The Goat and she produced Play About the Baby. So she said, you know what? She goes, are you back here? Are you doing this? And I said, yeah, I want to keep acting. I'm hoping to get a new show. And she said, I think I have a project for you. So she sent me a script of It Should Have Been You. And she said, pick which role you want to do. And so I was like, yeah, totally. And so I ended up reading the script and I liked the part of Brian because he didn't have a song. it was like a straight acting part. I was like, okay, this is super. I can coast on this part. But I also thought it was the better part. Like he had more of the meat of the show. And then I found out that Tyne Daly was involved and Harry
and
Harris
David Hyde Pierce. Yeah. Didn't David Hyde Pierce
directed it. So it had a lot of cachet. And I thought the script was really fun. So I signed on and this was it. This was going to be my entry to Broadway again. And within doing it, there were a couple of things that happened without going too personal. Well, I probably won't go too personal because that's who I am. I'm like, my life's an open book. So a couple of things, I realized that I had 3-year-old kids And Neil's career wasn't going to slow down at all. He was doing the Oscars in LA, and that was huge. You know, he was gone for 3 weeks prepping and all of that, and he's going to keep working and keep working. And of course he is. I can't ask him to stop. Yeah. And I was, you know, getting up with the kids at 6, taking them to school, having a full day, having rehearsal, coming home, dealing with the kids, making dinner, all of that, and like exhausted. And I also had, prior to that, I had neck surgery. And I started a codependency with pills, like substance abuse, full on substance abuse. Wow. So I was drinking and popping pills and doing a Broadway show and like not healthy. Like what am I thinking?
And a full-time dad. Wow.
And a full-time job. So like I ended up getting a nodule on my cords and I had to pull out of the show. Cause I was like, the doctor said, you can either keep doing the show and like have permanent damage to your voice, or you can like pull out and like chill the fuck out. So then a lot of that made me sort of really question on what was going on. And I ended up going to AA, and I'm almost like 5 years sober, which is amazing. It's been the best possible thing.
I didn't know that. That's amazing.
The best.
You know, we're both sober, right?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Fantastic. Right.
Yeah. 16 years.
Yeah, 14 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
That's Congratulations.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I had no idea. And I can't imagine even going back. Like, I don't see myself ever doing something like that again.
Uh-huh.
Like, I know you people relapse and stuff, but I mean, I really don't have cravings and stuff either. My life is too important now. It's too, like, with my kids and the whole different dynamic that I think and how I live my life, it's just not, I don't miss it. I really don't miss it. So, so there's been a lot of, you know, I've had a lot of chapters in my life.
Yeah, you sure have.
Well, I think what's interesting in hearing you talk too about your relationship and even as your journey of, you know, coming back to being an actor, or, you know, and it's this idea that we get questions a lot, like what's it like to be in a relationship with someone else in the business? And I always say, well, we both value adventure. You have to value adventure to be in a relationship with someone in this industry, I think, because you just never know.
Yeah.
You want to be open. What do you think like makes your relationship work, or what values do you guys have together that make it work?
I have to say it's super challenging. I mean, as you guys know, probably, and the competition element is super tough. It really, in the past like couple of months, I've really come to realize, like, because COVID and all of this happening, you really start, you know, thinking about what your life is. And I've been so codependent on my kids and my husband that I really feel like I've made them first in so many instances, like Neil first, the kids first. And I don't take time for myself of making me first. And I think that's the important thing. I need to take care of myself before I take care of anybody. And finally realizing that, I mean, in terms of what values, it's been a rocky road. I mean, Neil works all the time and that's great. And he's riding this amazing wave. Like, he just got done wrapping The Matrix 4 and that was huge. And now he literally got a call 5 days ago and now he's in Budapest doing a new movie.
It's just wow. Like,
so it's the inconsistency is really, really hard. So, so to try and find that the regularity in all of that is so important. The regularity in the kids' schedules, the regularity in like when he comes back, like making sure that every week you and him and I have a date night. Like, we have to spend one night, either if it's one night in the house and we watch a movie and spend time together, or if it's one night out or doing it opposite, like one night in, one night out, you know, but every week having one night a week where you actually spend one-on-one time with each other. That's so important.
That's really
great. So important. Do you guys do that?
Well, I mean, typically, probably yes, but in this,
neither of us are going to Budapest.
Yeah,
So we're together all the time. I mean,
like, it's away.
Yeah, we need to take time away. Like currently I am working out of the apartment, so I'll be leaving and I'll be gone for like 5 hours. So that's a good thing, because without that, I think
we learned in quarantine. Like
when we were first quarantining, we were fighting a lot. Yeah.
Well, it's wild. Either tearing people apart or it's bringing people together. And this was the first time that Neil and I, since like before How I Met Your Mother, that we spent every day together. It was wild, and it's an adjustment. I mean, we ended up becoming closer together just because we realized that we'll probably never get that again. You know, we'll never get this time spent with the kids and us forced to be. And we also decorated like a whole house. So I don't think we'd still be decorating if we didn't, you know, have quarantine. But it's been great. Like, you know, I'm super happy for him and super proud for him for, you know, riding these amazing waves that he has. But you know, there is a bit of me that are like, well, when's my turn going to happen again? And, you know, when's it going to be for me? And even my kids are saying, you know, you seem happier when you're doing, you know, I take a walk and I'm, you know, have music on and we're walking the dogs and I'm just dancing in the street, right. You know, and no one's around and I seem more fulfilled that way.
Yeah. So,
it's going to happen, but it's not happening for anybody really right now.
No, it's true. So and but, I've got a couple of projects that, you know, that I've been working on that I'm trying to produce as well. So that if anything, yeah, it might happen that way, but who knows? I mean, you know, I've had one audition every 2 months. Like that's not, mm-hmm. that's
yeah.
not,
yeah. Yeah.
That's not, and then of course, like Broadway, what's going to happen with Broadway?
Who knows?
I know, right?
And seriously.
It's like all these actors out of work. It's so scary.
Mm-hmm.
Like you guys are in Houston. What the F?
Yeah, we're in Houston. Yeah, I'm teaching basically full time, which has been a huge gift. But yeah, I mean, our whole worlds have completely shifted. Yeah.
And what's interesting too is we just matched with the surrogate and we're starting that process.
Oh my gosh, congratulations.
Thank you.
But like, who would have thought the pandemic would have made that?
Like during the pandemic, it's like all working out. I'm like, this is very so strange.
Weird. Yeah, I have a couple of friends that are in the middle of it and it's been a little difficult because they can't visit her. They can't go to the doctor's office. They can't.
Yeah.
It's wild. It's really wild. I mean, hopefully these vaccines will happen this spring and we'll all start, you know, becoming human again, you know.
Yeah, right now we're waiting for our surrogate to get her implant and
her implant.
Did I just say implant? I meant transfer.
Does she need a boob job? Is
that- she does. Yeah,
she's doing great.
No, sorry. and you know, we were hoping that it was going to happen this month and it turns out we might have to wait another month, but I'm feeling slightly frustrated this morning. I'm just gonna be really honest, you know, like a little frustrated because of everything that's happening in the world. But then like just that, I think this has been like such an exciting time for us too. And I just wonder like, what advice do you have for somebody who's, you know, having a child through surrogacy and during the pregnancy element of it? Like, how did you remain calm and faithful during the process?
Faithful to each other?
No, just that it would, you know, that it's all going to work out.
Faith, okay, like so. Hopeful.
Yeah.
You know what? It happened and I guess we just trusted the process. You know, I ended up becoming more friendly with the surrogate and Neil was like, this is a business transaction. This is like, so he had a whole different feel on how he felt about the surrogacy. But I talked to her, you know, every other day, a couple times a week and was pretty friendly with her, but it ended up going pretty smoothly. Did you guys? Is she getting on? Are you having an egg donor and a surrogate?
Yeah, we already had the embryos made. They're frozen.
Oh, great! So you're just waiting for transfer. That's what you said.
Yeah,
So yeah, I guess, you know, you know, it's, you guys should know, one day at a time.
Yeah, exactly. I know. It's just having this moment. I'm like, oh,
yeah, he's frustrated.
No, and I mean, it's so hard to, you know, want it done and happen. But, yeah. You know, this is a good lesson for parenting. You know, you got to just be patient, you know, it'll happen, and it'll happen when it's supposed to. And you'll all be screaming that, what did I do? Why did I have children? My life is over.
I remember now what I wanted to ask you, and it's, you know, your relationship, your family is a very visible LGBTQ family. And I think that many people use your, you know, I think most people in America, probably when they envision an LGBTQ family, you're one of the families they think about. And having come to New York when you did, especially in the industry, you know, I know when I moved to New York, there was a lot of, you know, you had to be slightly closeted. You couldn't be too out. You know, now it's like you have to be out. Otherwise, you're going to get flack, or, you know, like,
yeah.
And the evolution of the industry, plus the evolution of your life, your marriage, your family, do you feel pressure, or how do you view the industry and your relationship, and set clear boundaries and make sure you don't get sucked into the pressure that perhaps people put on that?
Well, we learned early on when we were living in LA, and LA is a much different vibe. Like, New York's more lax with the industry because there's so many other people that are doing other things, whereas LA, you're so engrossed in the business and you can't escape the business. Mm. We learned early on that if you hide, the price of your picture goes up. Like, if you shield your kids from the paparazzi, then they'll just want it more. Like, now there are laws. Before, there weren't laws, but there are laws that you have to blur out the kid's face and stuff. But we learned that if you slowly give people a slow drip of your life, the price of your head will go down. Like, it won't matter as much. But I mean, there are times that when the kids were babies that we had, you know, we were driving through red lights trying to get away from paparazzi and people hiding out in the bushes. Like, a dog of ours bit a paparazzi because he jumped out with a camera, and then he ended up suing us, saying that his work was done, and like, literally it nipped him, you know? But we had to pay this stupid paparazzi off because our dog bit him. But like, serves him fucking right. Like, jumping out of the bushes to try and get photos of our kids. Like, that's so sleazy. So, you know, we ended up like slowly showing, we never asked to be poster people. We're just living our life. Like, I'm glad that we can be, out there for people to see that it's totally great to have a family, and two guys are raising kids, and these kids are totally normal, and they're like any other kids, and it's not that much different than, you know, a straight couple. There's a lot more, you know, like, fabulous and disco and glitter around our house, but
that would have been there anyway if you didn't have the kids.
but it's, you know, in terms of pressure, you know, I guess there is, like, you know, God forbid anything happened that was like bad, you know, but it would be harder to deal with. So I do, there is a sense of like, oh God, if I screw up, then, like, I have that in my back of my mind, like, oh my God, if I relapse, it'll be all over the press, like, that, you know. So there is a bit of pressure with that, but like my life's an open book. The more I give out to people, I think the less they care, you know.
Right.
So I just want to live a good life and raise great children, and if that's, you know, if that's hard for people, then fuck it, you know.
Amen. Yeah. That's beautiful. All right. Well, this we're going to move into a segment that we do. Oh, we didn't warn you on this, so we're going to get your honest response. We do a segment we call Spotlight on Love.
Spotlight on Love.
Where someone has written in either on Instagram or to our website, and they want relationship, family, dating advice completely unqualified from us and our guests. I say that just because we are not licensed in any way to give this advice, but we will.
But we will gladly give
it. Gladly give it. Do you want to read it?
Yeah, this question isn't necessarily like a love question, but it's from an anonymous follower. It says, I feel like my extended family isn't taking COVID as seriously as I am, but I don't want to be the annoying person in the family who is the party pooper over the holidays. What advice do you have around setting boundaries around COVID during the holiday season?
It's tough. I mean, there's a lot of people that are expecting, you know, people to come home for the holidays and stuff. But I have to say, if the person is really worried about, you know, if they're getting on a plane or if they're traveling and they haven't had COVID before, like we had COVID early. So I'm like, whatever, it's fine. I think I'm, you know, I've got antibodies, I'm immune, I've got gold in my veins. But if they're not comfortable with it, then they're going to have to set a boundary. They're going to have to say, look, I'm going to have to skip a year. If you guys don't take this seriously and everyone's coming from everywhere and they're getting on flights and they're not wearing masks and they're not being safe and they're not washing their hands and they're not taking care of themselves, then I don't want to put myself in that kind of position. You're going to have to just FaceTime me on Christmas morning and say, you know, well, cheers in the morning and, you know, over computer. What do you guys think?
I think you're right. I think that it's hard to make that decision because, of course, I think we've all gotten a little lax with the virus at this moment.
Yeah, it's coming back. Like, it is not cute what's going on right
and
now.
And so we're like, well, my friend traveled, you know, 2 weeks ago and they were fine, so I can go be with my family. But I think that that's why we're in the situation we're in with the numbers, you know?
Yeah, I think the more people travel, the more it's going to just get spread. You know,
I mean, I just think I think you're right. I think just really setting clear boundaries and just saying, like, you know, I'm doing this as much for you as it is for me. Like, I'm just not going to come because I know that I don't want to just be another statistic and risk, you know.
Right. And I mean, if that's the case, maybe say, you know, I have to set a rules for you guys. If you guys are going to be getting on a plane, I need you guys to be wearing masks and I need to be wearing, well, you have to wear a mask, but wear gloves.
Face shields, gloves.
Yeah, whatever, you know, go, you know, as soon as, before you get on the plane, this is a good trick for anything. Spray some Afrin in each nostril and then put Neosporin around each nose. Like inside the nostril, because it'll block any sort of, I mean, not for your mouth, but for your nose.
Right. But then if you're wearing the mask, oh, that's good.
That's
a
great idea.
That's a really good idea.
So,
it's a hard situation because I feel like we've gotten so lax with it. And it's also weird because we're in Texas. So, like, I mean, people are wearing masks and there's obviously people are following the guidelines, but at the same time, I'm teaching in a school every day, face to face. Where I mean, I feel
are you far teaching enough theater?
I'm teaching ballet, so I feel far enough away.
Are they wearing masks or are they wearing?
Yeah, they're wearing masks. Yeah, they're wearing masks.
And
the studios are big.
How do they breathe?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's super hard, and especially teaching. So what happens is I'm talking and moving around, so I'm hyperventilating a lot. But you know, so it's an interesting time because we have gone back to some old ways that maybe aren't serving us. But I think we have to remember that nothing's changed.
I think it's time to kind of refresh, especially with the numbers.
Changed. Yeah,
refresh like, everything we felt we needed to do in March and April. We need to do that now. Yeah, that's my opinion.
Yeah. Boundaries are good. Boundaries are good.
Well, you are seriously, and I mean this, like, so you are such an inspiration. I look to you and your family as you know, you're artistic, creative, and you know, everything that we value, like we want to be a healthy family mm-hmm. system who makes their living being creatives. And you are an example of that every day. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. And please, I mean, any surrogate kid advice, you know, I might not give the best advice, but I've been through it. So I have some experience with it. So please let me know if you have anything, questions, anytime.
Thank you. And we cannot wait to see what comes for you with coming back into the theater. I think you own what you wanted, this new chapter. I'm so excited for you and your sobriety journey too. Congratulations. Yeah,
congratulations.
Hey, thank you so much. You too. It's amazing.
Thanks, dude. All right. And where can people follow you if they don't?
I'm David Burka on Twitter and DBlicious, DBelicious, DBlicious on Instagram. So, and then davidburka.com if you want like craft and recipe tips.
Yes. it's the season though.
No, for sure. I mean, you know, if you are looking for a great craft for the holidays, for Thanksgiving, I can show you how to make a mean cornucopia.
And you threw a mean baby.
Cornucopia. It's fantastic.
You also threw like an amazing baby shower for Kate.
Oh my God. Yes.
That was
fun.
I'm so well done.
Able to go. That was fun.
All right. Well, everyone listening, don't forget to love who you love
and love what you do.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.